Good morning, good afternoon, and good night. I am Brandon Alvarado, the Scarlet Fan here, and I'm so excited to be here tonight live for the Amateur Otaku. What is up, guys? How is everybody doing out there? We're very excited to be here. The Amateur Otaku crew is on fire and ready to talk anime because, guys, I don't know if you noticed, but the leaves are falling, so it's fall. And that is the worst pun I've ever made in my life. But the anime fall season, the one that we've feared and trembled in a corner about, is officially here. So I am so excited to be talking anime with you guys. We're trying out a new format. We have a fresh new look for the show. We have a lot to talk about and have fun with. But as you guys know, let's go around the table, talk about the crew. As always, I am joined by my co-host and co-creator of the Amateur Otaku, Isaac Wolf. What's up, man?
Good morning.
And that is the right amount of energy. And of course, the one and only Mike Thomas. What's up, bro?
Hey, guys, since we're doing this live, my Green Bay Packers just made a game-winning field goal in overtime like 10 seconds ago. So I'm jazzed. Let's talk some anime.
Yo! Hello, Wisconsin!
Let's do it.
Let's do it. So, guys, welcome to the Amateur Otaku Show. We are trying out a new format. We have a lot to talk about today. We got some topics to discuss, some news. And, of course, we have two great animes to talk about. With the new fall season, there's so much to cover. But a lot of times, we just don't have enough time for it. So we've designed a new show format for you guys so we can cover every single awesome show that's coming out. Yes, we're going to talk about My Hero this season. Yes, we're going to talk about Spy Family this season, but don't worry, we're also going to talk about Chainsaw Man, and we're also going to talk about Bleach, because Bleach, the thousand-year-old blood war, is coming out, the final arc of Bleach, so we're going to cover every single episode of that. And the way we're doing it is every Sunday, as soon as Chainsaw Man and Bleach come out, we're going to be doing bi-weekly coverages. So every Sunday, you're going to get a two-episode review of each of these shows. So every Sunday, you're going to get two shows. So this particular Sunday, we're going to talk about My Hero Academia, and we're going to talk about Spy Family, because season six of My Hero Academia is out, ladies and gentlemen. The war arc is starting. There's a lot going on. We're so excited. And yes, Mirko is amazing. And Spy Family Core 2 is back. So we're going to talk about episode 13 of Spy Family. And then when Chainsaw Man and Bleach come out, we're going to change it out. So one Sunday, we're going to talk about My Hero and Spy Family. The other Sunday, we're going to talk about Chainsaw Man and Bleach. So no worries, stay tuned, because throughout the week, we'll let you know what we're covering the next Sunday. So you guys can watch with us and talk with us, and we can enjoy this amazing fall season. Because guys, I don't know about you guys, but I'm so excited for everything that's coming. Are you guys excited? There's a lot coming, but we're going to do our best to cover it.
You know, dread it. Run from it. Destiny still arrives. You know, the fall season is upon us. Let's just be like Humpty Dumpty and have a great one.
Wow. But no cracking, guys. So I have all the horrible puns today. So as you guys know, the main topics of the show are going to be My Hero.
We haven't switched borders.
I mean, I can't promise that. The first, we're definitely going to talk about My Hero and Spy Family today, but before we go into our full-on reviews, we have a couple of topics that were just interesting. And every week, what's up, Ark Winder? Thank you for joining us, man. Every week, we're going to see topics that interest us, and we'll just discuss it at the top of the show. And the first thing is, tomorrow is the 20th anniversary of Naruto. Not the manga, but of the anime. The original anime debuted in Japan back in October 3rd, 2002. I love Naruto. I love Shippuden. Is it a perfect show? I would say it's perfect enough that I enjoy it as an entirety of a story. That's how I feel. How do you guys feel about Naruto? Do you love Naruto? Are you excited to celebrate it tomorrow?
I'll let your co-creator go first. What's up, Isaac?
Isaac.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Something. Just for a second, caught my attention. But when it comes to Naruto, well, what can I else can I say than fuck Boruto? Because I don't like that show, and it's a good show for its time. I don't think it's as...
Oh, boy.
Yeah, but I really should not have let Isaac go first, huh?
We rock well, right into that one.
I will only say fuck Boruto once. Okay, twice now, because I mentioned that. But
no, I just hate how you said, when it comes to Naruto, what can I say except for F Boruto?
It's like
there's so much to say.
Yes. I mean, I would understand. Yeah. You'd say Sakura's useless, even though I am Team Sakura. But damn, Isaac. Yeah. I mean... Damn, it's like that's like saying, hey guys, it's the 20th year of Naruto. Oh, look, it's Boruto's dad. Really? That's not the way you lead that conversation.
I mean, how should I put it?
Arcwinder, I appreciate your support. I'm glad you're enjoying it.
I enjoy Naruto. Don't get me wrong, but I don't have the same kind of experiences and everyone else has, because I didn't start with that one, how should I put it, early on. I was of the big threes, so to speak, when I started earlier on was Bleach and One Piece, and not Naruto, so I came into that one much later in my life, and there is some questionable stuff with the show. And manga, I think it's a good, solid piece, even if to some extent you can argue that it hasn't changed the best. It was aged the best in comparison to other shows, but that's a totally different thing.
So what you're trying to say is that it's cool, but it's not peak fiction. Is that what you're trying to say?
Yes.
Oh my god, I love how I love the underhanded celebration. Like, hey guys, this is an awesome show, but you know, there's One Piece.
There's always One Piece.
One Piece too many. Mike, 20th of Naruto. Talk to me. Thoughts?
Oh, I've got a lot of thoughts, and I'm just gonna do a little bit of self promotion. I watched Naruto for the first time 2 years ago, and I made a video about that experience. Yes. We can probably drop a link in the description later for you guys to check out. But yeah, it's funny how Isaac says it hasn't aged the best, right? Because again, I didn't watch this growing up. I didn't watch this as a kid. I watched this over the pandemic, had COVID, was locked in my house for 2 weeks, so I just binged the heck out of Naruto. And I freaking love this series. It is honestly probably still in my top 4 anime of all time. I know I haven't seen nearly as much as you guys, but for all its flaws, like, pacing is a problem. But if you can get past the weird pacing of the anime, it's amazing. I love that entire journey. I love seeing Naruto grow up over the course of that series, right? And we're about to talk My Hero Academia. I kind of wish we got that with Izuku, right? Because we said in the manga recording we just did, Deku, throughout everything so far, is still a first-year student in UA. And that is just insane to me. But being able to see Naruto and Sasuke and Sakura grow over the course of that series, the journey that he goes to on his way to, you know, eventually become Hokage of Konoha, I just think is amazing. I even have a video about Naruto dropping tomorrow for its anniversary, so make sure you check that out, because I just think it is a really special series. I love the magic system, I love the characters, I love the story that they accomplish in Naruto, and I think the anime does a great job in adapting it. Yeah, it's got a lot of filler. Yes, it takes 5 episodes for one fight, but throughout all of its flaws, I still had a heck of a time watching Naruto, and I still honestly feel like revisiting it every few months. That's how much I love Naruto.
Your plug jutsu aside, Mike, well said. but no, I'm on the same vein as you. And Isaac, I do enjoy Boruto. I haven't seen it in a long time, but I love the progression.
Well, you enjoy Sword Art. I'm not in Neon Genesis Evangelion.
You know what?
I don't like the condescending nature of that comment, Isaac. Like, dang.
And that's fine. You know why? Because you represent, Isaac, you represent a particular corner of the anime fandom. I represent another corner.
You know that I'm trying complete. To be a lovable asshole. Yeah, yeah. You know that, right?
Emphasis on. Okay, so. So, I love Naruto. I love the world. And yes, there's so much filler. But at the same time, I love how I can find purpose and context for the filler because the world is so rich. Does that make sense? Like, the world is so rich and interesting that a lot of these characters could get their own limited series. It's very similar to a lot of the issues that we've considered are present in My Hero. Like, a lot of these, like, the big three in My Hero, which, of course, you got your Deku, you have your Todoroki, and you have your Kachan and Bakugo, right? Each of them can lead their own show in one way, shape, or form. There's a lot of characters with so much depth and history in Konoha and in this world of ninjas that you don't even have to know the history of all of them, but every character feels lived. Does that make sense? Like, it feels like there's a history behind every character that's rich, that's interesting. And I enjoy it so much. Like the fact that every single death, in spite of the ideas of resurrection and the ways they find ways to bring people that were dead back, every death lands and hurts. Like, the fact that we feel so invested in a lot of things, and like we start Naruto with the truth of his parent, of him being an orphan. And we feel sad for him. And then we find out why he's an orphan. And we cry again. And then they bring their... Spoilers. And then they bring their parents back. His parents back in different ways. And we cry again. And the fact that they bring Minato back. And we still cry when he leaves. Like, the fact that we're able to process all that emotion throughout the length of the series is very remarkable and speaks to the testament of how interesting the show is. Does that make sense? So,
yeah. Like, no matter how insane the concepts are, like, once you get to the Shippuden era and you see how crazy Jutsu gets,
yes,
you're still invested in every single fight. You're still invested in every single character, which I think is just shows how strong that show is, that story is, right? With no matter how ridiculous it can get,
yeah,
we're still into it. We still buy into it by the end.
Because the writing is so strong. And I think that's the biggest thing also, right? Like it's Naruto is an example of how strong the writing is. And that's why I enjoy Boruto, because you can call it whatever you want. You can choose not to like it. And like, for example, I know that I'm not the only one that kind of hated that Kaguya came out of nowhere towards the end. We all kind of hated that in one way, shape, or form, even though the way that she's defeated by a sexy jutsu inversion is amazing. We all kind of don't like the basis of Boruto, but the focus on character building, because you know how you have world building and then you have interesting characters, right? I love how the characters shape the world, which I think is very particular for a show like Naruto, like, because all these characters shape the world and the environments that they're in. And that's why it's so interesting. Boruto still has that in his DNA. So as they're willing to try different things, a lot of people still love being in Konoha and being in that world. It might not be for some people, Isaac, but it is for others because they're trying different things and expanding the genre is very interesting. So,
oh yeah. I can't wait for 20 more years of Naruto.
Naruto, you're awesome. You're amazing. And I have no idea the name of the guy that made it because I don't have it on top of my head. Mike, you probably know it.
Kish. The creator of Naruto has taken over the manga, if I'm not mistaken, at least for a while.
Masashi Kishimoto.
Masashi Kishimoto. So, Mr. Kishimoto-san, thank you for Naruto. You're awesome. And we'll keep celebrating it for years to come. Guys, if you love Naruto as much as us, let us know in the comment section. Shoot us a tweet. Put it on there. Let us know. And celebrate Naruto with us. It's awesome. 20 years tomorrow. Now, one of the biggest questions that we've had as the fall season was approaching is we have a date for My Hero Academia and Spy Family, which are two of the biggest shows that are coming out. So it came out yesterday, which is October 1st. We found out that Chainsaw Man is going to be, correct me if I'm wrong, that is happening on Tuesdays.
Bleach on Mondays, Chainsaw Man on Tuesdays, yes.
Right. So Chainsaw Man is going to be on Tuesdays, which is going to be on Crunchyroll. But it took a while for us to find out where they're premiering Bleach. But we finally got our answer this week. It's going to be on Disney Plus and on Hulu, which it's funny because, first off, when we heard that Disney bought the distribution rights to Bleach, in my mind, I'm like, it sounds like a no-brainer. And I feel that Netflix is hitting themselves on the head right now, because with all the distribution rights that Netflix has acquired throughout the years, of course, not as much as Crunchyroll, because Crunchyroll is now a freaking behemoth after they bought Funimation. But I wouldn't be surprised that Netflix was probably in the running of getting that, because you know that Netflix can turn on the weekly release whenever they want to, because they've done it. Right.
Yeah.
So they turn that switch on and off whenever they want. But the fact that now Bleach officially has a house in the States. So what is it? So in the States, it's Hulu, right. And internationally it's going to be Disney Plus, correct?
Yes.
So are you guys excited? Do you guys like the idea that Disney Plus has the rights?
So I'm going to go first, cause I'm sure Isaac has more thoughts on this than I do. But I think it's fascinating because for me, this changes nothing. I watched Spy Family and I watched My Hero Academia on Hulu yesterday. And I have not subscribed to Crunchyroll, and I'm probably not going to until I want to watch my dubs when My Hero Academia gets
I love how you say it, to watch my dubs.
Yeah. You know, I'm a dub watcher. I only watch sub for the sake of the show. But that also means I don't need to subscribe to Crunchy until the dubs come out. So I've been watching everything on Hulu. Nothing really changed for me on that front. I just think it's really funny that Disney came out of nowhere and grabbed this up. Like, what was the process for somebody at Disney to say, you know what we should do? We should get one anime. There's no anime on Disney Plus. We're going to grab one. It's going to be the biggest one of the year.
Yep.
They do have something, an anime on Disney Japan, but I can't recall which one it is. Mm.
But the idea that Disney Plus is going to be the location internationally, I mean, of course, but it did happen the way I thought it was going to happen. I think off the air, I don't know if you were there, Isaac, but I know I was talking to Mike about this. I was really sure that in the States, Hulu was going to be the house for anime, because correct me if I'm wrong, Hulu is not available international, correct?
Nope, they are only American. Does it are they also in Canada?
I would assume it would be North America and Canada. I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case,
but no, it's not in Europe. And can I go regarding this?
Yes, I only have one thought, and I'll let you go, and you have the entire stage for yourself. I think it makes sense, because when Disney made the huge Fox purchase, right? I mean, they've always owned Hulu was one of the biggest things, because and everybody looked at Hulu as the avenue for adult content for Disney. Now, of course, a lot of people thought that whenever Netflix lost the rights to Daredevil and all that stuff, a lot of people thought that Hulu would be the house for it. But then again, of course, they made the space for Disney Plus. But even then, Bleach is too out there for that Disney Plus play. So I really like that's going to be on Hulu. So that's pretty cool. Isaac, the floor is yours.
Well, first of all, here in Europe, it's going to be Crunchy. And all Crunchy because, well, here in in Europe, it's pretty much Crunchy or nothing. We don't have the option of Hulu, so seeing that Disney Plus is getting arguably one of the biggest show in this fall is honestly kind of refreshing. I might not be the biggest fan of The House of the Mouse, but Crunchyroll needs more competition. They are pretty much... they are pretty much the monopoly when it comes to, or should I say Sony by now, considering they own both Funimation and Crunchyroll. They have their own dubbing studios, and they have their, and they pretty much own every Musco titles now besides Bleach and JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. Kind of they have One Piece, Dragon Ball, Demon Slayer, Naruto, you name it. And it's because of that that, yes, I'm going to be a bit going into a bit more, how should I put it, politics, so to speak. But it's because they are as big that, as they are, that they you could just, okay, just pay them. What is Mirko's English voice actor's name again? Do you guys know?
I have no idea.
I don't think I've heard it yet, so I don't know.
Yeah, but she's the English voice actor for Rika in Jujutsu Kaisen Zero, for example. And that Mike has seen that movie, and he knows that Rika is a role that that acquires a lot of screaming, so to speak, when she's in her cursed form. Or wouldn't you say, Mike?
And cut.
Sorry, Mike was off. Yes, 100%.
Yeah, and she only got $150 with no residuals. And for example, Ken McCarthy, I think that's his after name, who was the voice of Mob Psycho. He's a SAG-AFTRA member, but he didn't wrote SAG-AFTRA contract with Crunchy at the time when he did Mob. And he just asked, hey, can we have a meeting about this? He just asked for a meeting, and if they didn't came to a deal, he was going to say, okay, let's do it as per usual. And Crunchy didn't do that. And when Kotaku contacted them about it, they acted like the victim, acted like Kyle was the villain in all this, which is just... And due to this, I'm actually legitimately happy that Disney is getting this. And quite frankly, I know that this is going to probably piss off a lot of anime fans, but I hope Disney Plus steals some other big IPs from Crunchy and grab them to D Plus, because they need a big competition. Netflix is barely into the anime market in comparison. Amazon has some, but it's next to nothing. They need more. Funimation is like if Disney and Marvel and DC Comics in terms of the comic book industry.
Competition is good for business at the end of the day, because it allows servers and companies to innovate. But then again, I think also the current state of anime distribution rights, and what I mean by that is Crunchyroll owning so much, it also kind of falls on the rest of the production industry, because you got to understand, at least in the States, a lot of companies have been sleeping on anime. You know what I mean?
I'm not
saying that what you're saying doesn't make sense. I agree with you. But it also shows one of the things that actually inspired us to start the Amateur Otaku. The fact that anime is amazing and a lot of people don't talk about it enough. You know what I mean? So like the current landscape, it's kind of the result of that a lot of industries have slept on animation, have slept on Japanese or Japanese animation, anime in general, because the content is huge, but a lot of people haven't taken advantage of it. Netflix has been trying, but of course Crunchyroll still has the main power. But yeah, I agree with you. I do not want it to get to a point where we have to have 5 subscriptions to watch all the shows we want, because that's kind of like It would kind of suck though. But yeah, I don't see a bad, but of course we got to pay people. Please pay people, Crunchyroll. Play people. So guys, you got anything else on the whole Disney Plus Bleach shenanigans?
Sorry about that rant, but it was just something that
that's the point of the conversation.
That is something I needed to get off my system, considering we for a while, and since we talked about Bleach coming to Disney Plus, I felt that it was a suitable fitting. It fit the conversation.
Awesome. So, guys, as I mentioned at the top of the show, we're excited that Bleach and Chainsaw Man is coming. We have a date for the four major shows. We're going to be covering My Hero Academia and Spy Family this Sunday and next Sunday. And then when we return on Sunday, it's going to be the 16th. That's going to be our first coverage of Chainsaw Man and Bleach. So I'm very excited to start talking about that, and we're going to cover here on the show. Now, without further ado, I think we're ready to talk about some anime. What do you think, guys?
Yeah, let's talk about some current anime. We've been reminiscing on Naruto and Bleach and the legalities of Crunchyroll. Let's get into the good stuff, guys.
Yes. And first on the plate is the reigning champion. We're going to talk about My Hero. Because, guys, Season 6 of Boku no Hero Academia is out. Season 6, Episode 114, A Quiet Beginning. What an episode. So much happens, and the first thing I gotta say, I am so glad we didn't get a recap episode.
You know, I think this is their most creative episode yet, because it serves as a recap in a way, right? Hawk still details what the plan actually is from the last season, true. Which I think is great.
It's true. Well, and the funny thing is, it's a proper recap. Now that you say that, it makes me think... It's actually a proper recap, because if you remember, in most seasons premieres, it's a recap in the form of a filler episode.
Right.
It's an episode that has nothing to do with the book. It comes out of nowhere, and it tells you everybody's quirk again.
Like, we don't know Bakugo has explosions, man. After 5 seasons and 100 episodes, come on.
Yeah, it makes no sense. But we do find, we go back to Hawks. We know the plan. We see where he is, trying to find more information about the location. But the best thing about it is we hit the ground running, guys. The operation has started from the very first episode, which means for our amusement, I think we're focusing on getting this going to where it needs to go. And it didn't feel rushed. And I don't know, man. As a manga reader, I'm tense watching this episode. Because we know what's coming. But at the same time, I'm enjoying every minute of it. So, guys, thoughts. Isaac, AMHA. Season 6, episode 114. What are your thoughts? Did you have a favorite moment? Are you excited for what's coming? Is this a perfect episode? Tell me something, Isaac.
I love Mirko.
Yes.
Yeah, well said. Since he muted himself back, I assume he's done.
That's the review. Bye.
That's the review.
Well, I'm going to fix him for a sec. So...
I'll go. Don't worry about it. So
Isaac likes thick bunny people.
I mean, like I always say, guys, thick thighs save lives. And that's what Mirko's doing in this episode. So this is something that we would do last season for My Hero Academia. I mean myself, our good friend Leo Rydell of Geekly Goods, and Isaac. Shout out to Leo. Go subscribe to Geekly Goods. We would go through the manga, right? So I've kind of made a habit of rereading the manga chapters as the episode drops, right? And trying to see how it's paced, and we've determined that the best pacing for My Hero Academia is adapting 3 chapters an episode. Anything less than that, it drags too slow. Anything more than that, it usually feels rushed. This episode, of course, adapted chapter 258, titled Friends, 259, which is where the episode gets its title, A Quiet Beginning, and then chapter 260, which is called Life's Work, which is what the doctor goes on about at the end of the episode. So I think, like you said at the top, Brandon, we hit the ground running. This is basically a perfect episode of My Hero Academia. It's a perfect reintroduction to this story without being an awful filler recap like we usually get. I just think it's great. I think it's beautifully animated. I love the intro, right? They go full comic book with this new intro.
Yes.
And it's beautiful.
Yes.
Good.
No, I'm glad that you brought the opening up, because in great homage way, right? Because one of the things that we love about Horikoshi-san is that he loves paying homage to what he loves. He celebrates a lot of the literature that he enjoys through the book in many different ways. And we talked about it, like Spider-Man. There's hints of Batman. There's a lot of hints of different heroes. There's hints of Superman with All Might, or different versions of a Superman-like character in All Might, right? It's like his take on these ideas and these characters, apart from the whole philosophy ideas of villain heroes and stuff like that. But I love how it's interesting. And some might argue that, yes, we've seen very big battles already. Like, we saw Overhaul, we saw the Kamino arc and all that stuff. But I love how the opening is full-blown comic book. And this period, this what's coming as a manga reader, right? Without spoiling anything, what's coming, I think it's the closest to a crossover arc that we've gotten in My Hero in terms of scale. You know what I mean? Like, in terms of scale of, like, Crisis on Infinite Earths, in terms of scale of something like Secret Wars, like, every single character in this world is involved in this. Yeah. Like, nobody's left out. It's not just a fraction. It's not like, because with Overhaul, you can say that everybody was there, but no, there's a lot of people that wasn't there. You have a lot of important key players. But here, everybody on both sides of the battle is here. Big things are happening. Big things are promised. So many things are teased. Like, the biggest one that I love is, which is a tease in the opening. It's going to sound like a spoiler, but it's not. Don't worry about it. Because we all knew this was coming. But we know that Tomura Shigaraki works hand in hand with All for One. Mm-hmm. And he's getting more power from the doctor. We don't know what that power looks like, but the way they illustrate Shigaraki's hand and the center of his hand as a tease of what's coming. There's so much in this opening that's just so great.
Even how they shade Deku in the opening. You notice how the shadow hits his face, and it's the same way that it hits All Might's face. Yes. And it's like they embrace, like, All Might has always been drawn like a Western comic book character, but the fact that the intro went full-on Western comic book style.
Yes.
And they remembered to, like, you know what? Let's make Deku kind of look like All Might in this intro, which I thought was genius. And again, we're not even in the episode. That's how amazing that intro and opening sequence was. But getting into it, I love, you know, just picking up right where we left off, seeing the anger in Eraserhead and President Mike's eyes after what happened with Kurigiri last season. Seeing Mirko, the hero we haven't really seen much up until this point, just go ham on Nomus. Nomus that were, again, if you guys remember, some of the most powerful characters in the series. She tore through like 10 of them like they were nothing. All to get her own episode next week titled The Number 5 Hero, Mirko. I can't wait. I'm a Mirko stan just like Isaac. It's a fun
thing. Yes. Yes. She's awesome. She's just awesome and epic. It's just great. It's so good. I love how all the characters are divided. I love the one shot and Ed shot. wink, wink. There's a lot of this episode, and it's funny because it's an episode that a lot happens, but nothing happens.
Yeah, that's which why I think it counts as a recap, right? Because
yes,
they got us up to speed, even though nothing really happened until right. the very end.
Yeah, yep. Nothing really happens till like the very end of it. Again, can we? I hate this guy. I hate this character. We've barely spent time with him, and I hate him because he's like, it's like the epitome of pure evil. But at the same time, I like how we're entering that territory, right? And that's kind of like what they're telling us. Like, this is the darkest that My Hero has gotten. Like, we're seeing true evil manifest itself. Because especially when President Mike grabs him, right? Apart from the fact that we just saw President Mike, was it now or before? I think it was now, I think it was this episode or the last episode of the last season. We saw President Mike talk with Aizawa, and President Mike literally says that if I see this guy, I'm going to blow his brains out, kind of. Like
yeah.
He's going to like he's and but then he's not doing it because President Mike is first and foremost, he's a hero. You know? So the idea that he grabs him and he says, "So you have some type of regeneration quirk," which again, wink, wink, he's a doctor, wink, wink, he's supposed to save people, wink, wink, he's killing them and turning them into monsters with this with the regeneration quirk to self awful one, which is the symbol of pure evil, which it's funny because it kind of, he's kind of like an amalgam or a representation of what a serial killer looks like. Yeah. Which is crazy because I wasn't expecting to see someone of that nature. And also he's someone that's quirkless. So he was able to, he's been kept alive because All for One gave him this. So he continued to do evil.
Yeah. So it's insane. And I'm glad you mentioned the serial killer angle, right? Because he's talking about Shigaraki being his masterpiece. And I'm getting some major Professor Pig vibes from Batman.
Yes.
And it's like that.
Is that in a mixture of Mr. Sinister from X-Men?
Yes.
Where he doesn't care what he does. He just lives for his science and to create the perfect being.
Yeah. It's twisted. And like the entire story of the Nomu was always kind of disturbing. But yeah. Once we found out about Shirakumo last season, it's just insane because like President Mike was saying, you have the power to cheat death. You know how useful that would have been to prevent All Might from going into retirement, to save so many people dying of cancer. But instead, he lets All for One use this power, stay alive, and he's building the second coming of the devil, essentially.
Yep.
It's twisted. It's dark, and that's why, again, My Hero's very somewhat colorful and lighthearted opening is just funny. Because if you go back to last season, that was a dire opening, and this is not.
Yep.
And I think it's kind of messing with the audience a little bit, because
yep.
the anime watchers don't quite understand what's about to happen.
Yep.
But then you look at some frames of this intro, and I think that's what stands out to me about the intro and ending of this show, right? This is the most manga imagery any intro of My Hero Academia has ever used. They just straight up took Horikoshi panels and colored them. That's how much they took.
True. And did you notice that they did it in a grain form similar to Into the Spider-Verse?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a nice touch.
It's so great. Isaac, I see that you're back with us. You have any thoughts on MHA?
It's a perfect startup chapter episode for a season. And yeah. I'm glad that they didn't sort of like.
Are you talking about the? Are you talking about by? Are you talking about the right thigh or the left thigh? I want to make.
I was just speaking of the well,
that was so bad.
Always,
I'm sorry.
Always both, but what I'm talking about is well, okay, this is just getting ridiculous, but
yes,
anyway. What I'm trying to say is that while I did think the... Was it the last season that had that quote-unquote filler recap episode?
It was every season except for season one.
Yeah. Which didn't require a recap because it was season one.
Exactly.
Okay, it was. I think it was last season's recap filler episode. because this is how should I put it? It would be knowing what's about to happen. It would be quite whiplash-inducing going from a lighthearted recap episode and then this.
Mm-hmm. Great.
If you catch my drift.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah. And I think it's also interesting. Because you mentioned Brandon, like this is the Secret Wars, the Infinity War.
Hello, Liam.
What's up, my dude?
Yo.
This is the biggest arc in MHA. And I think it's fascinating because we always talk about how many characters are in this series. Did you guys notice that in the intro, for the first time ever, Uruk is not in it at all? Which I think is crazy to me because every intro made sure to always feature all of Class A. But there are so many pro heroes and so many other characters, so many villains that are in this season, that are in this opening, that Uraraka is not in it, which is just crazy how it shows how far the series has come to where there's characters being left out now. Which is kind of funny. Thank you, my guy. It took a lot of work, but rebranding the show has been worth it, I'd say.
But yeah, the fact that it's funny because you caught it because MHA is your jam and you're like a built-in encyclopedia of MHA, which respect, because I did not catch that she was missing. But also the other fact is also true. This is like it's the first time that every single character in this world has a purpose in some way, shape, or form, which is why I find this coming arc very complex and very interesting, because it's you know how the whole thing with Crisis of Infinite Earths, worlds will live, worlds will die, the multiverse will never be the same, whatever. Like, this is the type of arc. And the funny thing is that ever since they've promoted season 6, it's had that vibe. You know, we knew it was going to be big. The last season ended in a cliffhanger, but we knew that the heroes, or at least we assumed that Class 1A was in a good place. But it was very calm before the storm. And I love how we started right at the storm. So I am so excited. So excited for what's coming. My favorite moment in the book is coming very soon. And I can't wait for it to happen. But yeah, I love how also the previous ending of season 5 and this particular season starts. It also finds a way, and the opening does a big job, does a lot of the heavy lifting, I would say. I love how they're putting Shigaraki front and center as the villain. This is the first time that we've done this. We've seen the rise and evolution of the character, but we've always seen him as just another shonen character, but on the wrong side of things, right? The fact that they're making it a point that, no, Shigaraki's front and center. No, he's the leader of a big organization. No, he's getting the power to fulfill his dreams. I love that contrast because, of course, the best villains are in direct contrast or dichotomy to the hero, right? Mm-hmm. In one way, shape, or form. So I love how Deku wants to build a safe society. Shigaraki wants to destroy society. And they're both fighting to get power. So just as Deku's leveling up, Shigaraki's leveling up. But the fact that in the opening, we're seeing Shigaraki as the central evil figure against the entirety of Hero Society, it shows a dark shadow on the very happy opening that we're seeing. And I don't know. I can't wait to see how this continues to develop. And yes.
This imagery. Once you know, you know.
Yes. 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 And it's funny. And it's funny that you show this because we don't know if we'll even see this season. But I love how they're saying, hey, guys, tipping the hat Hope you. It's like the show's way of saying, I hope you're keeping up.
Yeah, it's again one of those if you know, you know type of situations. Yep. But yeah, man, there's a lot to enjoy in this episode. I think it's just a great start. It gets you right into it. And that cliffhanger, right, with Miracle busting through the lab and just she just smirks and says, are you the real one? It's so great. So great. There's a shot, and I'm not going to show the manga panel because it's a spoiler.
Hold on. And Leo, what you're describing is well thought out art. So I agree. Yes, sir. It's amazing. It's not coincidental, and it's so well done.
Yeah, we mentioned this a few times last season, Leo. A lot of stuff happens, and I'm glad you mentioned that because there's this shot, right?
Yes.
And again, I'm not showing the manga version of this panel because that's a spoiler, but yeah. They did the thing. And if you know, you know what this means. And yes. I'm like, dang, we're really going all out with the manga imagery here. Let's just say spring, right? That's crazy.
Yep.
But yeah, I love the animation too. Like the recoil that they add to Mitoko's thighs is just hilarious to me. Like what? That is such a funny detail, but it just shows the power. She's basically the Rock Lee of the pro heroes, right? She's not being able to manipulate fabric like Best Genist or shoot fire like Endeavor. She just goes in for the punch, for the kick. That's what she does. Yes.
I would say she's more the guy. The guy. Mm-hmm. Like she's just unlocking the gates, bro. And just going at it, bro. Like, every time we're seeing, she's just going faster and faster and faster.
I love Leo's comment right here. I guess he missed Isaac's entire review was just bye.
Let's bring back the main theme of the episode.
No, which of it's course, not just my entire review, and yes, thick thighs save lives. But I digress. And I think you guys
celebrate with us, Leo.
Yes.
Yeah, and I have lost my train of thought right now.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but I feel that if anybody was going to embrace an inner Rick Sanchez in the My Hero Academia universe, it would be Mirko for some reason. Because if you guys remember the dragon episode from Rick and Morty when he goes like, hey, are you going to go slay the dragon? And Rick goes, first of all, I always slay it, queen. That's like Mirko right there. Yes. Mirko always slays it.
She's the best. I'm glad Leo dropped this in the chat, though. What was your favorite moment from this episode?
I'm trying to think. I think it's going to be that present Mike moment. Because the intensity that... First of all, present Mike is awesome, right? But he's always been like a background character. But I love how... Because of his connection to Aizawa, that has always been alluded to. The fact that they've showed us the connection that he has, that they have through that mutual friend that we found out was murdered and brought back to life by this horrible person, right? I love how you're able to see the integrity of the character of Present Mike. He's not just a loudmouth. Like that this particular arc. And this moment, I love how they present Present Mike as an actual person. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
As opposed to that comedic version of himself that we all see and know. You know, it's kind of like we've always met the All Might version of Present Mike. We've never met what's All Might's real name?
Toshinori.
We've never met the Toshinori version of Present Mike. Does that make sense? And we finally met him last season. And in this particular moment when he's grabbing the doctor, we see him that way for the first time. And I love the humanity and the power in that scene and the intensity in his eyes. And it's like, and of course, there's great action scenes coming with him. So it's awesome too. But I love him being there And I don't know. It was just a touching, powerful moment. I think that's the most powerful, emotional moment of the episode. That moment right there is my favorite.
Yeah. Yeah. Isaac, do you have a favorite moment from this one?
Big ties save lives.
Okay. Yeah. I should have saw that coming. I'm sorry.
Yeah. You shouldn't have asked.
So for me, I'm kind of on the same track as you, right? Where I love seeing a different side of these pro heroes, sides that we haven't seen before. And I really love the scene between Shroom, Kaminari, and Midnight, right? Where she's reassuring her students that, yeah, they're being put on the front lines, but it's for a purpose and it's for a reason. That's why they come to UA. And we haven't seen that warmth from Midnight before. She's, like President Mike, is usually used in a comedic effect. We never really gave her those moments with those students one-on-one like that. So I thought that was a really nice touch for that character.
Yeah.
And especially like giving us a reason on why this specific group of kids are on the front lines. There's a reason Bakugo and Deku and Shoto aren't on the front lines, even though they're the most powerful kids in their class. I just think that's a really interesting moment, a really great character moment for one of the teachers we don't see that much of. Especially, again, we don't get a lot of female pro heroes in this story.
True.
So I just thought that was a really nice small moment with Midnight. Also, another heartbreaking moment, right, is Twice and Hawks. And that's painful because you know that something bad's going to happen. You know mm-hmm. that Hawks is going to have to betray Twice's trust. Even though Twice is like the nicest guy in the world and you see his origin story, I don't even think if anything went right, it's that Joker additive of one bad day. Yep. Twice should not be a villain. Hawks yep. even sees that. And that it's just going to hurt even more when that betrayal eventually happens. And the intro even alludes to it a little bit.
Yep.
With like seeing Sad Man's Parade and seeing Hawks, and it's like, gosh, that's yep. gonna hurt. And seeing it set up here, it's like that's gonna make it hurt even worse when we get there.
Yeah. So, he says, "Love the moment when the heroes get tricked." Is he talking about the fact when they thought?
When I think it's when Garaki he's using Twice his quirk, and he's not really there, right?
Right. That was a nice. Oh my god.
Well, that too, Leia. She can ride me any day.
And thighs with that,
thighs and tits. So this is it's as thirsty as that cover. So this particular I mean, you said enough. So thanks for the help, Leo. Yes, no, but that was a good moment too, because they thought they had him. But of course, it can't be that easy, right?
Yeah.
Now, are you guys excited that it's going to be two consecutive cores? So we're getting a total. I think it's almost 26 episodes. I think it's the total episodes that we're getting, and it's going to be consecutive cores. It means that whatever break we get, it's going to be minimal. It's not going to be 3 months, it'll probably be maybe a month, and we'll get the next core right away. Maybe it'll be something similar to Spy Family that only went on break for what, 3 months? I don't think it's gonna be that long. But I'm excited because to think if they're prepared to do, because correct me if the way I see it is in terms of production, right? You start a season because you have at least 70% of the season in the can. Right. And you're touching up the last couple of episodes to be able to air them by the time they're due. Right. Mm-hmm. So because you can't. So if they're ready to do two consecutive cores, it means that especially where the story is headed, they got to have already a team working on season 7 to be able to keep up and bring season 7 again next fall. So I'm actually excited that. It hypes me to the idea that there won't be that much of a gap between seasons. So
I mean, Bones pretty much only do My Hero Academia. So
I mean, they do other stuff, but I get what you're saying.
Yeah. So I just wanted to make it clear for everybody: Bones, aside from the pandemic year, they've always done two cores. a season for My Hero Academia. So I feel like, as from a production standpoint, it's no different than usual, which is great. But on the flip side of that, I think I prefer Spy Family's model of 13 episodes spread out, you know, having the two cores separate, simply because My Hero Academia aired in the spring, and we didn't get the next season until the following fall. So it's been about, what, 18 months since season 5 aired? So there's just longer gaps in between seasons of My Hero Academia, because they're letting the manga get a certain distance, then they start adapting the chapters that they have. Whereas Spy Family, they're doing the same amount of episodes as a season of My Hero, but we're getting more frequent drops. So in Spy Family's case, we're in Core 2, about 3 months removed from Core 1, but we'll probably get Season 2 in, what, 12 months instead of the 18 we got between My Hero seasons?
Possibly.
And they need to do the map way with the last season, whenever that happened, and they make the final season Core 1, final season Core 2, final season Core 3.
See, but that's the funny thing with Attack on Titan. I think that's a very particular animal, because when you analyze it, they're not really cores, because cores tend to be the same length, and they're varying in length, and they also feel very isolated from each other, apart from the fact that we know it's the final season.
Yeah, so, but if they are not cores, then they shouldn't put two current cores as the final season, part one and part two. But I get what you're saying.
And I don't disagree with you. I agree with you 100%. But they know that we're suckers, and we're going to watch it anyway.
They could have had the movie, yeah, but you guys didn't want it.
Hey,
I don't want a movie, because anime movies always comes months later here in Europe than what it is in US, and it comes months later after to US than what it is in Japan. So it benefits us better if it's not, the ending doesn't come as a movie. So
Isaac doesn't want the movie; he wants the musical. So,
I mean, there is a stage play of Attack on Titans being made.
And I know you love it.
So without getting into My Hero Academia manga spoilers, what are your thoughts on Geekly Goods' comment right here?
Oh, it's World Heroes Mission. Sorry. Maybe I'm a bit biased considering.
I'm not going to lie to you.
Considering our interview with Ryan, I might be a bit biased, but I feel the World Heroes Mission.
I'm going to tell you something right here now, and I'm not ashamed. I'm a Two Heroes guy. That's my MHA movie. To me, there's nothing like Deku and All Might fighting side by side with fake mech against fake Magneto. To me, that's just the best ever, ever. And that's just me. I'm a Two Heroes guy, man.
He called it.
Hey, it's all good, bro. I appreciate the love. Now, I wonder. Oh, wait, Mike, do you say your part? Tell us what's your favorite, and then I'll say my comment to close out the conversation.
So, I love Two Heroes. I love Heroes Rising. I enjoy World Heroes Mission, though I think it's the weakest of the three.
Agreed.
Heroes Rising, I have a love-hate relationship with that movie, because Horikoshi, again, has stated that was his original planning for the end of My Hero Academia, right? And you can feel it, but I also hate that Chimera is Dobby. He's a stand-in for Dobby. Nine is a stand-in for Shigaraki. And I kind of just wish we got that, where it was Dobby, Shigaraki, Touga, you know, the League of Villains at the time, especially if it's a non-canon movie. But,
true,
you know, considering what they had to work with, and they had these other stand-in characters, I think it's great. I think it's the most rewatchable of the three, because Two Heroes, it's very slow pace compared to the other two movies.
Agreed.
Which is fine. It's not necessarily a knock against the movie, but I feel like it'd be easier to rewatch these other two if you're in for a battle shonen, which is what My Hero tends to be. But My Hero is also partly slice of life. And that's where Two Heroes kind of shines, because we're seeing Deku plucking him out, putting him in a new environment, seeing how he interacts with that world. And then we introduce the action scenes. So I think they all have their place in the world of My Hero. It just really depends on what you're into, though I do think I lean towards Heroes Rising, because again, that ending is incredible. But it's also, I feel like, the easiest rewatch of the three.
I think my biggest appreciation for Two Heroes comes from the fact that it feels the most flow. It feels like the most connected one to the show.
I think it's the only one that's officially confirmed to be canon.
Right. Because even, but the fun, but what I love about it is that it's the only one that you can watch and feel connected to everything that you've seen from the show before. Heroes Rising has that, but it's a lot more isolated, I would say. And just, again, All Might, all day. But yeah, Heroes Rising, Two Heroes. All of them are great. Now, the last thing I wanted to talk about to close out the My Hero conversation is, what do you guys think? So in regards to the two cores, do you think that the two cores are going to be evenly divided? Or do you think that they, I can't disagree with that comment. It's just great. It's just great. Do you think they're going to be evenly separated, or do you think that they're going to do a Demon Slayer where they're going to do the selection of episodes that better fit the story? Are we getting a longer core first and then a smaller core? How do you guys think they're going to play it?
I guess I'll go. My Hero Academia, this is okay, so we're manga readers. I'm not going to spoil plot details, don't worry. But we know how this story is going to go.
Right.
And the war is paced differently from the rest of My Hero Academia. So you can argue that these two cores are going to be one story arc, as opposed to being two story arcs. So I feel like, you know, when they go on their little break, and then the intro and the ending change, get new songs, I think that's going to just be kind of post-battle going into the second half of what this entire war encompasses, if that makes sense.
Right.
And that might be 13 episodes in. That might be 16 episodes in. It's we're going to reach Attack on Titan points where it's like, yeah, this core is probably going to be 16 episodes and the next one's going to be 10 episodes.
Right.
I think that's kind of where, especially how the manga's paced from this point forward, it's going to feel like that.
That's actually what I hope they do, because I feel is them doing the editing in favor of the story, which is very important for the what they're trying to tell and express now. What are your thoughts, Isaac?
I think you guys are spot on.
Yeah. Because
or Dalmatians?
If you look back at previous seasons, right, you can split them almost right down the middle, two course lights. Right. But you look at, it's usually two and a half arcs per season. So like last season, we had the Class A, Class B arc. We had the My Villain Academia arc. And then we ended it with the Endeavor Agency arc. So it was... The Endeavor Agency arc is very short, so they're able to kind of tack that on at the very end. So they covered three story arcs within those two core. I feel like it's going to be a similar situation with this season.
Right. So I'm excited, guys. My Hero's back, baby. I'm excited that we get another episode of My Hero next week. I can't wait to get back with you guys and talk about some more My Hero next week. Guys, we're going to take a brief intermission because we're getting ready to cover Spy Family. If you haven't seen Spy Family, you'll have 60 minutes to head out And if you want to catch us on the flip side, make sure you click like and subscribe to our YouTube channel so you don't miss any streams, any coverage every Sunday. We are doing My Hero Academia and Spy Family next week. And whenever Chainsaw Man and Bleach starts, we'll be going to be covering that the week after. So guys, you can find me at the Scarlet Fan 52 on Twitter. You can find Isaac where?
Work at Wilbum Entertainment and on Emblemaniac on Twitter.
And you can find the Novice Cinephile at
Novice Cinephile, youtube.com/Novice Cinephile as well. See you in a bit.
We'll see you in a bit, guys. See you with Spy Family. Good morning, good afternoon, and good night, and welcome back to the Amateur Otaku, the show, the live stream, the moment, the fire, the dog lovers, and yeah, I said dog because this is a very hairy and furry episode because we're coming back with Spy Family. Spy Family Core 2 started yesterday. I'm so excited to be back watching the Forgers. Guys, are you guys excited to talk about Spy Family again?
My guy, this episode was elegant.
Elegant!
Your Forgers, please step on me.
Oh my god. You know, I'm surprised Isaac has not passed out by getting medical and your on the same day.
The best, the best part of waking up is Forgers coming back. Forgers. I'm sorry, that's not coffee. But that's how hype I am, like coffee, because Forgers, okay, that was really bad.
You have no idea, Liam. You have no idea.
I know, for some reason, thighs are coming back. So, guys, Spy Family Core 2 Season 1 comes back with a bang, an awesome opening. Personally, I prefer the opening of the first core. But the ending of this second core is phenomenal. I love the imagery, the metaphor, the similes. There's a lot of conversation there, and I'm very, very, very excited about that. So I love Spy Family, and I think the biggest thing I can say about this particular episode, 13, Project Apple, I don't have a specific moment. It's towards the end, that would be my favorite moment. But the biggest thing, guys, that I felt coming back to this is that I remember how much I love these characters. That's yes. How I feel. That's how I feel. How do you guys feel?
Yeah, it's a great return to the world of Spy X Family, right? Like, yeah. I remember you and Isaac did the bulk of the recaps bi-weekly last season. Jamie, Isaac, and I did the season or the core one recap. And we were really just kind of talking about how this series made us fall in love with this family, with these characters in such a short amount of time. And it's one of those things where, yeah, the 3-month layoff wasn't that long, but once we get back into this episode, once you see the intro, I'm just like, yeah, it's good to be back. I forgot how much I miss this show, how much I love this show. This episode, in my opinion, was really fun. I don't think it's my favorite by any means of Spy Family, but it's just a great return, especially the dog is kind of a cliffhanger from last core.
Yeah.
I keep trying to say season. I really hate how they kind of broke up the terms here. But yeah, it's just really great to return to Spy Family. Anya needs to earn her Stella. She wanted a dog as a prize. We just get right into things. I love how the intro focuses a lot on Yor, whereas the first intro focused a lot on Lloyd. It kind of feels like the family dynamics are getting a lot more structure and settling down as they get more comfortable with each other. And maybe we can finally get some Yor stories. That's going to get Isaac really jazzed.
Yep. Yep. I Isaac, this episode, this back to form, you're the only one that's ahead to all of us in terms of the manga. So you've loved Spy Family for a great amount of time. But
well, I'm collecting what it alongside 13 or 14 other manga. So
yeah. So at this point, what are your thoughts about this particular episode? Is it better than what you read? Are you excited for what's coming? That you know it's coming. What are your thoughts about the return?
It's continued to be an amazing adaptation, and you guys are gonna love this doggy. I'm just gonna say that one, that thing.
That's Mr. Dog to you, okay?
Dog is awesome. Just gonna say that.
Yes, I love.
Adios, bro. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for joining us, brother. I love how that dog is kind of. Because it's a family-oriented show, right? Or at least it's about this family, right? I love how this particular dog screams Beethoven. Does that make... You know what I mean? Like the type of dog that just ruins or just rules the family in one way, shape, or form. I love how they set up this Anya-Mr. Dog duo. I am so excited about that. Like, I can't wait for Avengers... Because they kind of like, they're like two kids. Like, they're both trying to be amazing, but they're both like, you know, one's a dog and one's a kid. So it's like, I love how they take themselves very seriously. And then things happen. Like, when Anya is like, we're going to save the day. We're going to save the day. And the dog is just going in circles. and Anya's like, it was awesome.
Not just... You know, like that's a great moment. But I love how Lloyd is trying to get away from his mission and Anya's just like, Dad needs to shit. It takes a very long time.
Yeah.
And it's just like that is so that was so unexpected and so funny.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
And it's
yes.
just like, God, I love Anya so much. And again, as much as I love these characters, they're all idiots. Cause Lloyd, he's just like, nice save. Why is she saving you, Lloyd? Have you ever thought about that? She's done this multiple times for you now.
Yep, yep. And that's the beauty about the show, is that all of them are so focused in hiding their real selves because they're convinced that the lie of who they that the lie that they choose to live is the key to the happiness that they're experiencing. Which again, it's a great proposition for great comedy and great drama. Like I kind of want to see where the story goes once the veil and everything's revealed, right? Because I love how that's lingering with every single episode. But the way the story develops with that thesis of these two identities clashing with each other, what they're hiding, what they're not saying, and how that feels for comedy. I love how it's serious and comedic and amazing at the same time. Like, the direction is still on point. The pacing is still on point. Every character is highlighted in their strong suits. But going back to the idea of them being convinced of their lie, like, Lloyd is so focused on not telling people that he's a spy that he's not paying attention to things that are in his face. And it's just hilarious.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. Yeah. I also love, this is a holdover from the previous core. I love how the work of a spy is never done, right? Like, his mission, Project Strix, is to have this family get Anya to befriend Damien Desmond so they can go after Donovan Desmond. But that doesn't mean that's his only mission. And he has to start taking on new missions, which I think is just a really cool way to get Lloyd, one, away from Yor and Anya so they can start having their own stories. Yes. But also, I'm excited to see what that means and where we're going to take Lloyd as a character and kind of see where he goes on these solo adventures. I think it's a really cool idea.
I love that you brought that up because the idea of exploring different pairings of characters, right? and making them the center of it. I spoke that some of the best episodes of the previous core were those moments of Anya and Yor together. And now we have Anya and the dog that was just introduced, and it's still awesome, you know? But also it kind of shows how Twilight's reality, maybe it's going to start playing with the idea of the family he's trying to build, right? So yeah. I want to see how that plays out. Now, can we talk about how Yor freaks out? And every time she freaks out, her answer is, okay, I know how to be an assassin, so I'm just going to do this. And I don't care where I am. Like, there's people everywhere in this dog shelter, and nobody sees her jump to the roof in like 2 seconds.
Yeah, she just scales up the wall. Like, she just walked up the wall like she's a Naruto. It was so funny.
Yes.
And I love how immediately she surveys, and she's just like, she's clearly not here. Like, yes. In an instant, she surveyed the entire area.
Yep.
I just think you're... is so great. She's such a fun character.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm really like, I'm with you that the first intro is the best intro, but I'm really glad it focused on Yor, because I'm hoping that means we get more stories involving her. Because a lot of the beginning, because again, the story is mainly told from Anya and Twilight's point of view. But I do want to start having more assassin adventures with Yor and kind of balance it 33% across all of the characters, because they're all so entertaining and they're all so strong. I just, again, love how, like you said, as soon as she freaks out, she goes into Black Widow mode. Like, all logic, all basic logic goes out the window. It's just like, okay, who do I need to kill? What do I need to do to find my daughter?
And it's funny you say that, because the funny thing about her is that the way she's always solved problems is by murdering people. Like, because that's how she got money for her and her brother to survive. That's how she was able to take care of her family. So everything she knows about dealing with stuff is killing people, or you putting those skills to the test. So I love how the family unit aspect of the show is her biggest challenge, not being the badass character she is. Because the whole thing with her is the idea that she doesn't fit in. Because the reason she decides to go with Lloyd, as opposed to apart from the fact that she kind of likes the dynamic that they have, is because she wants to make expectations of her from society. She wants to eliminate that pressure, right? She's not doing it because she wants it. So how that transitions to her wanting a family, I just, that's the story that I want to see from Yor, which I agree, I want more time with Yor.
No comment.
So you just come out of nowhere, say no comment, and then our minds are going, this best.
I mean, you did say you want to spend more time with Yor, so Isaac's probably just a little jealous.
No. I can't blame him, so.
Wow.
Oh, jeez. Okay,
Isaac. In this thirsty edition of the Amateur Otaku.
This has been a thirsty week, and I fear it's not going to get any better. We had the weird My Hero Academia manga chapter. We had Mirko in the anime. We have Yor in this episode. Guys,
that episode was for another reason, and not for in a good way.
I mean, we weren't thirsty, but somebody was definitely thirsty. I'll say that much.
Not me, at least.
What's... Yes, Queen.
Yes, Queen.
Yes. So... I guess I want to ask, like, Brandon, what are your thoughts on this new dog, right? Because whenever you introduce a new dynamic to a story, a part of me always gets a little scared, because you don't want to break the formula.
Right.
And I know we talked about how in this episode it mainly works, but do you think it's something that'll continue to work in this new dynamic?
So I love that you mentioned the idea of formula, because what's the formula of so we can talk about the formula of the show as the family unit and that lie and deceit, but also that enjoyment and growth, right? Yeah. As the formula. But when you go beyond that, the formula of the show is by presenting these fascinating characters, but also putting their flaws first. Like Yor is this crazy killing skilled assassin that has no social skills whatsoever and doesn't know what to do to survive in the regular world, right? Anya is this cute girl that's curious, but she's been rejected by everybody because she can read everyone's thoughts. So what does she do in a world where she can read everyone's thoughts, right? That's the dynamic. With Twilight, he doesn't know what it is to have a family. So he is tasked to build a family when he doesn't know what that looks like, right? Because he was an orphan and all that, right? So I love the fact that when we're introduced to this dog, the first thing we're introduced with is how amazing he is, but he's a freaking coward. I love how we don't only just see him as this awesome dog, but we also see that he's still a dog that understands that he can be hurt, but he doesn't want to be hurt. You know what I mean? So in that sense, the formula is still there. Like it's all about this group of tragic, flawed characters finding family and a home with themselves, you know, where they can accept themselves. And also I love, like, going back to, you kind of see a lot of that in the ending is,
yeah,
you see a bunch of different characters. We see Yor's brother, we see a female character that we haven't met before, but these are all characters. So this family is composed of broken people that together they find ways to complete each other by opening up in one way, shape, or form. And because of the roles that each of them have, they find ways of opening up with each other without telling the truth anyway. So that finds it very interesting. And also the dynamic that only Anya really kind of understands the dog, because she has telepathy and that allows her to do it. So it kind of has that corner. So I don't know. I think that it will work because of the presentation and how close to the entry point for every single character it's been. Because when we met Yor, we met both sides of her, not just the killer side. You know what I mean? So every time they present, when we met Yor's brother, we met the super officer, and then we met the guy that loved his sister way too that much. So it's like we see, and the funny thing is that every other character that we meet, apart from Desmond, maybe, none of them have this dual identity or presentation. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I like how that particular formula is part of the thesis of the show. So as long as we find a way to make it creative for each new character that's introduced, I think it can work.
Yeah, I'm with you. I agree there. Isaac can't really speak to that idea because he already knows. But yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see how the dog plays off of the parents, because you're right. Anya can somewhat understand the dog because of the telepathy. But one, that doesn't mean the dog necessarily understands Anya, which I think is true. A nice wrinkle there.
Yep.
So, but also, will this dog affect Yor and Lloyd in any way? Because they can't communicate with it like Anya can, or understand it like Anya can. But will this dog, like, see some of Twilight's missions and end up accidentally interfering or any crazy shenanigans like that? So I'm excited to see how they kind of approach it.
Now, Isaac, what are your thoughts without being yourself? No, I'm kidding. What are your thoughts?
By being myself, or What do you exactly mean that? Not being an asshole or something? But
no.
Anyway.
Oh my God, no. By what I meant is by simply not saying no comment because you know everything.
Yeah, like, well, no comment about that. But
proceeds to do it anyway. Gotta love him.
yes, no
but
choice.
Anyway, but like I said earlier in the beginning, without going into too many spoilers, if you like this dog now, you will love him later. And they managed to introduce him perfectly in this episode, will I add?
Nice. See, Isaac, at the end of the day, to do the right thing and you make us happy.
That's what.
Damn it, Isaac.
Yeah. You walked into that one, man. You did it yourself.
I did do that. So, I mean, we've talked about the episode. I mean, I love how Spy Family is so awesome that we really haven't even talked about the synopsis of what happens in the episode because we just enjoy talking about these characters.
It's a pretty basic premise when you think about it.
Yeah. They got Lloyd. And also speaks of good writing because even though all the characters are in different areas doing different things, the dog, or at least the main plot, unites them in one way, shape, or form, and it fits to all the characters, right? The dog is a central figure. They're trying to find the dog. Dog is part of the whole thing that they're doing with the bomb and assassination. Lloyd is trying to stop the assassination. Anya sees the dog, so goes right by it. Everything goes wrong. It's great. So episode is good. I do want to see how it ends up. It was a pretty cool cliffhanger. And to start the conversation of favorite moments, I'm going to say mine. The last moment of the episode where Yor makes this person or transforms this person into a human pinball. That was so awesome.
She's a master of shoot style.
Yes. No, but the craziest thing is then she goes for the kicker, the final line. She is too young to be married off. And you're like, Yor is nuts. Like, does Yor spend her days just watching reality television? Is that what she does every single day?
No, but like, I love how we introduce that idea. Like, we see her watching the news and she gets that. She starts panicking. She's like, oh no, they probably kidnapped her to marry her. And it's like, she just sticks with it. She never comes off of that idea like, well, no, it can't be that. It's right. Just like, nope, she made up her mind. That's what's happening. Yep. She's not going to let Anya get married at the age of 5, technically 6. She's lying, but yeah.
Yes.
It's so great. Like, okay, if we're talking about favorite moments, mine has to be Anya covering for Lloyd because it just made me fall out of my chair laughing because it was so unexpected.
Yes.
And again, gotta wait for Crunchy to dub these things because I know the dub is going to just make me laugh even harder.
Because you're going to hear the word shit, that's why.
Yeah, from tiny little Anya. It's going to just make it even funnier.
Yeah.
But no, seriously, like, I think this episode, it's hard for me to choose a favorite moment because it's just so strong. And I love, because you were mentioning the plot of this episode, and we have the dog bombs, which is, again, weird. But I love how Anya sees this dog who clearly has an owner, but Anya is a small child, so she completely ignores that fact and goes to get the dog anyway. And it's like, it's moments like that where as smart as Anya is, she's still a little kid. She sees a dog, she's just going to go to the dog.
Yep.
Even though the dog is not for sale, the dog is being walked by a human being. There's no reason for her to go up to it, and she gets herself in trouble because she is a small child with telepathy.
There is a reason why she goes there other than plot points. I'm just going to say that.
No comment.
Hey! So, Isaac, favorite moment?
I'm so proud of Mike.
So, favorite moment of episode 13 of Spy Family?
Or pinballing that guy.
Yes.
I've never been so jealous in my life.
Amen. It's all in the thighs. So, guys, I think we've set our fill on Spy Family. What do y'all think?
I'd say so. It was a fun episode. Can't wait for episode 14.
Yes. So, guys, I hope you guys enjoyed this edition of the Amateur Otaku live stream. We were so excited to bring this new version of the Amateur Otaku. If you have topics or questions for us, make sure you send it to us. Send it to our Twitter feed at Amateur Otaku Pod. A lot of people don't know this, but we also have an email. It's amateurotakurtf@gmail.com. I'll check it from time to time. If I see something there, I'll bring it over. But if you love what we do, make sure you like and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Make sure you click on that bell for notifications so you do not miss any single episode of the Amateur Otaku podcast. If you want to listen to us in podcast form, make sure you find us on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, wherever podcasts are found, except Podbean for some reason. But we are available on all podcast formats because that's what the Amateur Otaku does, speak awesome anime. Next Sunday, we'll pick up our conversation with episode 115, is it, of My Hero Academia, and episode 14 of Spy Family. We will see you next time. If you need to find me, I'm Brandon Alvarado, and you can find me at the Scarlet Fan 52. Mike Thomas, where can people find you?
You can find me at Novice Cinephile on Twitter, on YouTube at youtube.com/novicecinephile. You can also find our other podcast, movie podcast, The Chatter After. It's a great bi-weekly series. We're reviewing everything that we love to talk about in the world of movies, television, even video games, because we did cover The Last of Us. So pretty much everything there.
We did the thing.
Check it out. We did the thing. You have no idea what loss is.
Well done. Nice delivery.
That's my Joel. That's my Joel.
Yes. Yes. Isaac, if people wanted to find you, where can they find you in the webs?
Well, you can find my work at Vovum Entertainment, and you can find me at Emblemaniac on Twitter.
So, guys, stay awesome, keep watching anime, and thank you for joining us at the Amateur Otaku. We will see you next time. Peace!